Okay. Let's see if this thing works here. Trying to do damn interview chat. Is this working?
Seems to be.
Oh, okay.
So, you're Hardy Lloyd?
Yeah, I'm Reverend Hardy Lloyd, the leader of the Church of Ben Clausen.
Okay. Do you have all your audio recording stuff set up?
Hold on, let me check.
Yeah, okay.
I'm trying to record. Is there something on the actual Discord channel that lets me record as well, or is that automatic?
Because there's nothing on here.
Okay.
I'm using OBS. If you don't have anything on your desktop, I think it's free.
Well, I'm using a basic voice recorder, and hopefully that's working.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to like turn it off and check the recording, see if it's working fine, then go ahead.
Well, I've got two.
I haven't started mine yet.
Oh, okay. Let me check the one. I know the one on the phone is definitely working. Let me check this one here.
Okay. Seems to be.
Is there something on the app? See if that works. Hold on. Come on. Is this working?
Seems to be.
Okay, yeah, it does seem to work.
Everything's working? Okay. I'll start mine. I've got a few questions I want to ask you about. It's about 50-50, I'd say, on, like, the church that you run, and also, like, your own personal experiences, you know?
Yeah, well, I did join with Matt back in 2001, so I do have some insight into everything that happened within the old WCOTC/TCM during that time as well.
I don't actually. Ben was dead by then, right?
He died in 1993.
Okay, so you were never a part of his church, okay?
No, I was like 15.
Okay. Yeah, well, I was wondering if you had some insight into his group, but I got, you know.
I do have, I'm in contact, and I do have a few members that were part of the old COTC, and I've talked with them about during back in the 80s with Ben Clausen, as well as during the time during the mid to late 90s before Matt and during Matt. So I do have some knowledge of that, but yeah, no, I converted
not personal.
Back in,
yeah.
No, I converted 2001 back when Matt was already fully established.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to start the recording. I'll give you a chance to I'll say introduce yourself and stuff.
Okay.
and then we'll get into it. All right. Oh. So Reverend Hardy Lloyd, just tell us about who you are and what you do.
All right, well, I'm Reverend Hardy Lloyd, the Pontifex Maximus of the Church of Ben Clausen. Our website is creativityreligion.com and churchofbenclausen.org. There's a detailed history of my own activism as far as creativity is concerned, plus a detailed history of Ben Clausen's history. On there, there's some stuff on Matt Hale, but most people know about Matt Hale, so I kind of left a lot of the little things out. And the Church, I want to throw this out there right off the bat. The Church of Ben Clausen is run as an actual church. The CA, which I was briefly an associate member of, and the TCM, which technically I was a member of during the when it switched from WCOTC to TCM, which is the Creativity Movement. The Creativity Movement and the Creativity Alliance are run as basically just membership groups or gangs. They're not actually run as churches. The Church of Ben Clausen is run strictly as a church. I was raised Mormon, and I brought a lot of that that structure, that organization into the Church of Ben Clausen. So it is run as an actual church. Each congregation and primary group is semi-independent of me. That's in case anything happens to me, of course, you know, nothing happens to them. But the Church of Ben Clausen is the only worldwide creativity church that actually is run as a church. We do have a sister church in the Northwest, but they're strictly associated with individuals in the Northwest of the United States. And we do have a sister church in Russia, but that focuses solely on Russia. But we do have members worldwide.
Yeah. So would you say that's like the fundamental, your beliefs are generally the same as like the Creativity Alliance and such,
well,
but your structure is the main difference?
Well, not just the structure, but the way we follow it. I follow creativity as a religion because it is. And Campbell, who runs the CA, which I don't have very much nice to say about him, Campbell, who runs the CA, barring my own suspicions of him being a possible agent for the Australian police, he treats it as a membership gang. And he's actually even stated that. He says that he's modeled it on the biker gangs of Australia and the United States. It's not run as a church. And as far as I know, very few people that are affiliated with the CA actually follow creativity as a religion. The TCM is a little bit better than the CA, you know, but once again, they have a very political membership or organization mindset, whereas I'm adamant that this is a religion, and there's a sense of spiritual philosophy that goes along with the creed, and I'm adamant that we see it that way and we practice it that way. So for us, we're not into parades and rallies like Matt was, or things like that, or running people for office as some offshoots have done, or the NSM and whatnot. Yeah, we strictly follow the religion as a religion.
So you would say they're more like ideology, like ideologues, I guess, than like religious.
Well, you know, they have the same books I have. But there's clearly a difference on how they run it. And as I said, I was affiliated with both. And they're definitely run more as a membership organization. They're run more like the National Alliance, or the NSM, or, other organizations that used to be around, like White Revolution, the original National Alliance, as well as the new National Alliance. They basically run things that way. I'm adamant that creativity, first off, it was founded as a religion. We practice it that way. I'm adamant that people that join the Church of Ben Clausen see it that way. And if you're looking for a membership group to join, or you're looking for lots of parades and rallies, then don't bother with us. We have none of that.
So, do you have like actual church locations, or is it more of at like members' houses and stuff?
No, we don't have any physical structures. Our sister church in Russia, I believe they have a building. But mostly it's just, it's mostly primary groups and small congregations, family units, a lot of family units and a lot of primary groups. And a primary group is just a small gathering of individuals. And some things are just, you know, it's just a husband and wife and one or two or three or four children. And that will be their congregation. Sometimes they invite friends, you know, of like mind to attend. But we focus, like the Mormons do, we focus a lot on the family unit, the individual, small, the primary groups, very small congregations, so that we can get the word out and so that white people can prepare without being molested, you know, without being seen as some type of political threat or... It also keeps the shirkers at bay, people that just want to join a membership group for whatever, so they can go to a rally and yell at people. There's a lot of that out there, and we focus on practicing and following the religion, the 16 commandments, and that's what we're about. We're not about any of the basic white power movement type stuff. In fact, I've officially distanced the Church of Ben Clausen from the overall white power movement anyway. So we don't consider ourselves truly affiliated with the rest of the white racial loyalist movement, whether you want to call it the white power movement or whatever. We network with very few organizations, very, very few, and we pretty much stay out of the whole white power movement apparatus.
Okay. Well, Nat, I've got some questions about particular beliefs that your church has.
Yeah, sure.
One of them is, so and you're pro-abortion, right?
Yeah, that's another thing. Creativity is definitely different from your average. There's a lot of even white power people that are just anti-abortion automatic. For us, we're pro-abortion to an extent. Obviously, we don't want white people to have abortions. you know, we would prefer that white people didn't have abortions, but, you know, if it's within the first few months, especially if there was a rape involved or if there's some genetic defect, then yeah, it's the woman's choice to have an abortion, or I should say the couple's choice.
Okay, yeah, cool. Well, that's what, because I know that a lot of white groups are like, it's killing a white baby. And I was wondering if there was a, because majority of abortions are performed by minorities, if that was influencing the aspect of it at all, or
Say that again.
So a lot of white supremacy type groups, they are okay with abortions because it's mostly killing minority babies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if that was influencing at all, or is it more of just...
Well,
you're pro-choice, like, type of deal.
I grew up, I know some people always find it funny. I seem to always mention George Carlin. I grew up on George Carlin, and my parents were very libertarian. They were basically kind of like liberal Mormons. Not liberal in the modern sense, but just kind of liberal in everyday practice. And my parents encouraged me to think and to study and do research, so I grew up reading a lot of scientific novels or scientific books and journals and things like that. And of course, George Carlin had a big influence on me when I was growing up. I've always seen myself as a bit of a libertarian. And to me, when I was a kid, I looked at nature. You know, whenever I had a question I didn't know the answer to, I would look to nature. Is this allowed under nature? And in nature, George Carlin actually has this in one of his comedy bits, but in nature, you do see abortion. You do see a natural kind of abortion occur in nature, and plus also believing in eugenics, you know, breeding up. To me, abortion is just a form of eugenics. It's just a natural part of pregnancy. Obviously, not all bodies reject, a pregnancy. And not all pregnancies require an abortion for health reasons or whatnot. But I've always looked at it through the eyes of nature. Actually, all my questions, I kind of look through the eyes of nature. And in nature, abortion is something that does occur in a kind of passive eugenic sense. And so, you know, as a form of evolution and whatnot. And so I've been pro-abortion because of that. And obviously, we creators, you know, through salubrious living and eugenics, believe that abortion is necessary once in a while. We would just prefer white people don't get abortions. We're the minority population. It's kind of stupid, you know, to get an abortion, especially when, you know, it's not as difficult to live on a budget as a lot of people think. You know, when you throw out materialism, then being poor and having a child isn't as much as a burden as people are led to believe. So that's pretty much our stance. Obviously, we don't want white people to have an abortion, but we're not opposed to it for medical reasons or even during the first couple of months.
Yeah. Okay. I'm also...
I've had a lot of arguments with white power people that weren't creators on this. They accused me of promoting white genocide and things like
this. No, yeah, that's why I thought it contrasted with a lot of white nationalist views, so I thought it was interesting.
Well, something else I want to throw out there early on is that I understand, you know, there are phrases and euphemisms and definitions that get thrown around a lot, like white nationalist, white Christian nationalist, whatever the fuck that is. white supremacy. We don't use these terms to describe us. You know.
No, you use white separationist, right?
Yeah. We are creators, which is what we call ourselves. But we see ourselves as white racial loyalists, white separatists. You know, I've actually even met one or two people that actually believed in slavery, and you know, it's just ridiculous. I don't know where these people come from. You know, they want to go back to like 1850, and it's just ridiculous. But there are a lot of people out there that do fit the stereotype of Hollywood. You know, the so-called quote white supremacist. American History X, higher learning type thing. And then, you know, there are individuals that do, you know, think third position wise, but still find issue with some of our stances that I would consider to be white racial comrades, even though we do disagree.
So what would you say the, like, I assume for white supremacists, the final goal would either be all other races are exterminated or enslaved in some way. That seems to be the general... white supremacists, not necessarily your group, right?
Well, I have met I'm trying to get something to drink. I have met very few people that actually believe in racial enslavement of blacks or whatever. I've met very few people like that. Most people, whether they believe in creativity or third position or something akin to either of those, most just want to be separated. It's the figment of Hollywood that you have a bunch of these kind of rednecky Ku Klux Klansmen types that are running around that want to, you know, or the stereotypical like Third Reich types that, you know, supposedly want to create a slave population or something like that. I've run into maybe one or two individuals like that. But the vast majority of people I've talked to in person and online just want racial separation. And of course, you know.
So what is the final goal of racial separation? Would it be like everyone goes back to their homeland type deal, or?
Well, I've written about this before. Before I converted to creativity, I was a part of a multinational, multiracial third position movement, and. I still have contacts to this day that aren't white in Latin America and Asia. And I don't, you know, the goal has always been separation. Basically, you know, Europe and North America for white people, I guess Australia as well, and then pretty much, you know, everybody else can divvy up the rest of the planet. That's usually what everyone seems to agree on. Basically, I know that I want to live in a country that's based upon creativity. I want to live in a creativity theocracy. That's what I want to live in. And, you know, if that's what it took, I'd be willing to move tomorrow. And I think most people on all, you know, most people, regardless of what race they are, I think at the end of the day would probably prefer to be in a country for their own particular group. And so that seems to be the general consensus, is just, well, there'll be some countries that are for the whites and some countries for the others, and, you know, just let the chips kind of fall where they may. As I said, I've run into almost very, very few people that want to do a let's conquer and kill and enslave everybody. Very, very few people I've run into actually believe that. There are some out there, don't get me wrong.
No, I get what you're saying, but I'm curious about what about Native Americans and Native people, that because the United States and like North America was colonized. Do you argue giving them back the land and we go back to Europe, or?
Sometimes I get asked that question, so. The Americas don't really have an indigenous population. This was the last place on Earth to really be colonized by anybody. So this is one of those places that probably could be divided up. Obviously, when you look at Eurasia, you know, the Eastern Hemisphere, there's obviously, you know, Europe and North Asia are obviously historically white. Although technically, you know, North Africa was historically white, I'm sure most people would be like, yeah, that's fine. The Arabs can have Arabia and North Africa, the blacks can have the rest of Africa. I'm sure most people would agree with that. The Americas, though, doesn't really have any real racial, there's no real racial identity for the Americas, because this was the last place to be colonized by anybody. So there's really no indigenous person here. I would, though, make the claim, citing the works of Graham Hancock, that white people did live in the Americas before the Red Indians came over. The Red Indians are kind of only go back, I think, about 15,000 years or 18,000 years. But when we read Graham Hancock's findings and others, it's obvious white people were here first. But, you know, before them, there was nobody. So I think the Americas are one of those places that could probably just be divided up between everybody. Pretty much everybody gets their own say. You know, you could have white Latinos can have Chile, Uruguay, Argentina. Brown Latinos can have the upper part, maybe Central America for the Afro-Caribbean Latino type mixes, you know, and so on. You know, there's more than enough room on Earth to give everybody, you know, what they want.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the, like, Graham Hancock, is it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the things that actually was really interesting to me, because ancient white history, that's a whole page on your website.
Yeah. I've actually written a lot more than that's on there. I just haven't had the time for it. But you can still hear me as I'm clicking on things, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, on there, yeah, there is in, I think it's in two different sections, but yeah, if you go to my personal writings on the website, I do have an essay article, whatever, that does talk about, you know, ancient white timeline. In fact, yeah, it's ancient white timeline. And in there, I basically try to map out scientifically, the basic history as far as we're sure, the ancient white, you know, the history of ancient white man. And so that's some of that is based upon the writings of Graham Hancock, others on Dr. Scotch, Anthony West, Robert Bivol to a lesser extent, and some other people, you know, Hamlet's Mill, Serpent in the Sky, books like that predate Graham Hancock. And that's where that comes from.
Okay. Well,
also I grew up reading a lot of books on evolution too. So I wanted to try to map it out as much as we can map it out. And so that's what that article's about.
Well, are you at all concerned that, like, you know, Graham Hancock, he's not exactly the most respected in the archaeological community.
Well,
a lot of
people
disagree with him.
Well, yeah, but I mean, most people who disagree with him are established people, and established people obviously don't like it when somebody rocks the boat. I mean,
go ahead.
Just because somebody's hated doesn't mean they're wrong. You know, just as like somebody who's praised doesn't mean they're right.
I agree.
Yeah, I go on science, and I go on logic and common sense, and you know, I believe in Occam's razor. You know, if you have a logical explanation for things, that tends to be correct. And
but he's used outdated models, like, or outdated information, because he was using, I know one of the things I looked up, it was something with Antarctica, like he was saying that people lived on the continent of Antarctica in the past.
Yeah,
but he was using he was using a study from the 40s when they didn't know that, oh yeah, the ice is this old.
Well,
and then
well,
in the
No, I understand what you're saying. The thing is that the findings that he cites, and in later books, because it's not just Fingerprints of the Gods. I'm also citing Magicians of the Gods, America Before, the Message of the Sphinx. These are books, you know, like America Before just came out recently, and I think 5 years before that we had the updated version of Magicians of the Gods. So we do have some using, you know, using some archaeology, using geology. We do have some understanding of the weather patterns that existed so long ago. There is a lot of evidence that to suggest that the ice part of the ice age of Antarctica is not, you know, 100,000 years old, or whatever they, you know, mainstream scientists claim it is. There's a lot of evidence to say, well, it just goes back a few thousand years. I guess it really just depends on what source you want to cite. The basic, what we do know for certain is that Zeptepi, all the evidence suggests that Zeptepi was a real event. The downfall was a real event. And so we understand that there is, when you go back 50,000 years, I'm not talking about the, you know, hundreds of thousands of years that some people cite. You know, if you read Forbidden Archaeology, Aryan man goes back like a million years or more. You know, it depends on, you know, what book you want to cite. And I think we're kind of getting into science fiction at that point. You know, I don't think white man was walking around here a billion years ago. But some people have written that. And, you know, I think that Graham Hancock, as well as my own research, I think Dr. Scotch, Anthony West, I think these are probably the closest that we'll really get to understanding evolution and man's ancient history. You know, it's just the further back you go, the less we're going to know, and I think it's always going to be that way. So I guess it's really, you really just need to go with whatever evidence is the most, or whatever evidence you believe has been proven the most, and just run with that. I mean, everybody's going to believe their own thing. I've had debates with Christian identity people, whom I can't stand, who claim the Earth is only 7,500 years old, and that the white man only goes back 5,500 years, and there were giants and Nephilim or whatever walking around, and, you know, these weird alien-like people, and, you know, it really just depends, I guess, just believe whatever you want and run with it, you know?
Okay. I got some questions about your...
I was going to make a joke, but you were talking. Yeah, anyway.
Sorry. Okay. I have some questions about your own experience with the creativity movement.
Yeah, sure.
Or just in general.
I want to apologize. There's a cricket out my window that's going crazy, so I don't know if you can hear that.
It's fine. I don't think I'm picking
anything up. Okay, good. Okay. This is driving me bonkers.
So I do know that you. When I was looking you up, I read that you were kicked out of the Matt Hales Church.
That's
in
not
2003.
True. That's not true. I don't.
It's
know
not true.
No. Well. Actually, the original lie, which is repeated, is that Matt Hale himself kicked me out in 2001 or 2002. But that's not true, because he ordained me in December of 2002. So I don't know where that comes from. There are a lot of people in the CA and TCM that don't like me. And I think it's because I treat creativity as a religion. I've had people that say that they used to be creators that attack me because they think I treat it too much as a religion, and instead of treating it as something political or as a social movement. And I'm not sure. I mean, it's a religion. It was founded as a religion. It's to be followed as a religion. But there are a lot of rumors that were spread by individuals, a handful of people in the TCM and CA, that for whatever reason don't like the fact that I really do treat it as a religion. And I'm not sure where they get off on that, but it is what it is.
Well, I read it was related to were you ever checked into a psychiatric hospital around that time?
Now, what happened was, is in 2001, after putting up, this is after, I went out one night by myself and put up nearly 10,000 flyers. This is in the span of one night. And I basically just peppered the entire East End. That's a section of Pittsburgh, which is where I used to live. And I put up nearly 10,000 flyers and calling cards and stickers in the span of about 6 hours one night. I went out, I think it was 11. I think I started at 11 o'clock and finished up at like 5:30 a.m. And it got a lot of media attention. And some judge somewhere used that as pretense for that I could be violent. And had the cops pick me up, kidnap me, essentially put me in the loony bin. But then the doctor is like, you know, the guy's just a racist asshole. He's not insane. He's just a jerk. And that's the only time I've ever had to deal with that. But that happened in 2001.
Okay. All right. When we were emailing each other, one of the things you brought up was that you have experienced persecution and systematic racism all your life, right?
Yeah.
Would you like to detail that, you know?
Where to start? Obviously, you know, I guess I was just born thinking different, you know. I've always looked to nature. Obviously, being raised Mormon didn't help, you know, because a lot of people have prejudicial notions on Mormons as well. But I was raised Mormon. I always looked to nature, you know. I always was a little bit different, you know. And so there was basic, you know, bullying and stuff like that that I think a lot of children go through in life. The real hardcore political persecution, economic persecution, that stuff happened later on in life. And it seemed to mostly start up after I converted to creativity. It was as if my conversion to creativity sparked some type of outrage in people. Which I never, you know, outside of just hatred of white people or hatred of creativity, I don't really understand where it comes from. I mean, all I really do is write articles. You know, I don't do these marches that lead into violent riots. You know, I don't do parades and things like that. All I do is pass out some flyers, you know, like once a month, and I write articles. I put up a whole bunch of flyers one night, and, you know, a few days later, they tossed me in the loony bin. On the pretense that me passing out, me engaging in free speech would somehow lead to violence. The doctor obviously was like, well, you know, you know, he's just a jerk, as I said before, you know, he's not violent. There's been other instances of persecution. I've lost jobs over my religion. You know, they look me up online. Of course, in the 21st century, that's going to happen pretty much to anybody who posts anything crazy online, whether it's pornography or politics, race, religion, what have you. Somebody's going to see it. Somebody's going to get offended. Somebody's going to get fired. But, you know, with somebody like me, it seems to be a little bit more so. Well, I've been fired from jobs just because I write essays and articles. I lived on the street at one point. I lived in a shelter at one point. I've done 12 years total in incarceration because of my religion, for practicing my religion. I've been nearly killed a few times. I've been attacked on the street. I was attacked in prison. Cops like to hassle me on occasion. It's just, you know, it's the price you pay, though. You know, when you believe in something strongly and you're willing to fight for it and people see that, you're bound to get persecuted, whether you believe in creativity or Mormonism, whether you're a communist or a libertarian or a Catholic activist or what have you. You know, somebody somewhere is going to take issue with it, and you're going to have problems in life. But, you know, it's I think it's just part of, you know, just fighting for something you believe in. It's going to happen. If you're like everybody else and you want to be just like one of the sheep and, you know, just go to work, punch in, punch out, pay your taxes, you know, get drunk on the weekend, and after, you know, 60, 70, 80 years, you die, you know, the system kind of leaves you alone. Special interest groups leave you alone. But when you actually stand up for a principle, whatever that principle is, you're going to face problems in life, hardships. And I don't regret it. I just wish people understood it more. It annoys me when I go through these things and people seem to think it's a lark, or I made it up, or, but I mean, the history is clear. It's there. You know, I've never been ashamed of anything, and I've never kept any secrets from anybody. So,
well, personally, when I read that, I was assuming that you felt this prejudice for being white. It seems more, from what you're saying, it seems more focused on because you're a creator, not necessarily,
well,
specifically because you're white.
Before you could say it was, you know, just the normal anti-white racism that we see today. There definitely were moments where I was picked on just because I was white. This is from blacks. And, you know, that happened early on in life. But, I mean, you know, bullying just kind of happens. The reason I don't make a big thing out of that is because that's before I was really politically active. Growing up, you're going to deal with bullying and persecution no matter where you live. If you go to a school that's in a black neighborhood and you're white, or you're mestizo, you're going to get bullied. You're going to get picked on. You're going to face discrimination and persecution. If you're poor and you go to a rich school for some reason, you know, the same thing's going to happen. So I tend to kind of ignore, I just don't put too much emphasis on that part in my life, because that's probably just something that goes with everybody. Obviously, being white in America, it's kind of harder. The system is just rigged against you. But I'd rather people focus on, you know, what I believe in, rather than the fact that, you know, I just went through bullying when I was a kid just because of my skin color. I mean, I guess I could for propaganda, but I'd rather focus on the religion.
So would you say that applies to any in-group versus out-group? Like, you gave the example of a white kid in a black school.
Yeah.
Would you say that applies to a black kid in a white school?
Like, well, no, not really in America. You know, if this was Russia, yeah, I would say that. But this is America, and it's obvious the system is anti-white. I just, for whatever reason, I just choose not really to focus on when I was a kid as much as
you focus more on your activism and how that's affected you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah. Was I picked on by blacks because I was white? Yeah, that was obvious, and they were actually very open about that they were picking on me just because I was white. So, yeah, you know, the fights I got into in prison, it was all race stuff. You know, the fights I got into in school, it was all race stuff. So, yeah, obviously I've had to deal with persecution just for being white. But a lot of, maybe I should put it this way. When I bring that up, a lot of people dismiss it by simply just saying, well, you were a kid, so maybe it just had to deal with the normal, you know, going through puberty, being picked on type thing. And I don't believe that, but that's usually the argument people throw at me anytime I mention some of the hardships that I grew up with. And so that's probably more of the reason why I just kind of say, well, obviously I suffered when I was a kid, but it's nothing compared to today. And actually, that brings up something else, that it is more today, more pronounced than, excuse me, like when I was a kid, I was picked on just because of my white skin. Today, it's like, you know, I'm white. It's my race, my ethnicity, my religion, my political stance, my philosophical stance. You know, it's like everything. Whereas when I was a kid, it was just black people just didn't like the white kid. But today, it's like, you know, the system and society just hates anything I'm about.
But as for your beliefs, you ever, like, have you considered that because your beliefs are generally be cruel to other races, only fight for the... Have you ever thought that that influenced? Because a lot of people don't agree with that. Like even,
wait,
other whites, you know?
Well, wait, I'm not sure I heard everything. Can you repeat that?
From your page, you're supposed to be enemies of other races and stuff. Like you, I know you're a white separationist, but you're still supposed to. It seems like make it harder for other people, for other races. You know.
I'm not really sure I'm following. I mean, we believe in racial separation. That's obvious. And you know, when somebody attacks white, a white person. You know, then, you know, it's our duty if we witness that to stop it. Is that what you're at? Maybe I'm just not.
Yeah, but through violent means, right? That is, violent means are specifically allowed by your church.
Well, yeah. I mean, if somebody's beating up a white kid and I see it, I'm going to step in there. I'm going to put an end to it real quick.
Is preemptively allowed?
Say that again.
Is preemptive?
Well, I'm a huge believer in leaderless resistance. You know, I grew up back in the 80s and 90s, and that was all, you know, Robert Matthews, Louis Beam, Tom Metzger stuff. You know, Turner Diaries, Hunter, Joseph Paul Franklin. That was all stuff back then. And when I first got active in the white power movement, although I consider the Church of Ben Clausen to be separate from that today, when I got into that, that's what it was, you know, like, hey, you know, we're at war with the system. The system is trying to commit white genocide. You know, voting doesn't do anything. Therefore, we have no choice but to commit acts of terrorism. And I believe that's correct. I think that leaderless resistance, and I think the writings of Louis Beam and David Lane and Tom Metzger, Robert Matthews, I think that these are spot on as far as dealing with, you know, an enemy that's as big as the system is. I'm not opposed to violence at all. Unlike people in the CA or the TCM that like to put, you know, a nice disclaimer on everything that like, oh, you know, we believe in only being legal. You know, which I don't know, to me seems like you're a bit of a pussy. You know, I don't shy away from telling people, yeah, if leaderless resistance is your talent, then go and do that. I have no problems telling somebody that.
But what I'm trying to say is, so you've gotten fired from jobs because of your beliefs, right?
Yeah.
That's a belief that most, being violent, you know, committing terrorist acts, most people would say, yeah, I don't want an employee that is advocating for that.
Well, this is
regardless of what your of what the goal is, you know.
No, I understand what you're saying with that, but this is America, and if you know, when I'm at work, I'm completely professional. You know that I'm at work. I'm there to do a job. That's what I'm being paid for. I don't go to work, you know, wearing a skinhead T-shirt and say, okay, let's get these niggers out of here. You know, I don't do that. And if some, you know, I actually work very hard, whatever job I get hired for. And that's probably to prove to people around me that if I am getting fired, it's because solely because of my religion, my race, my beliefs. It's obviously has nothing to do with the way I treat a customer or, well, depending on the job. You know, some jobs, you know, you don't deal with customers like, you know, when you work warehouse or in a factory. But, you know, yeah. I don't mistreat customers. I'm always polite. If the job doesn't entail customers, I do my job correctly. I do it the right way. That way, you know, when I do get fired, I damn well know it's because of my religion. I'm being fired solely because of something that I believe in.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you elaborated on that because it is interesting.
It's not like American History X or something, you know, or higher learning where, you know, like, you know, where I'm some redheaded Jew who's, you know, real skinny, you know, walks in with a skinhead T-shirt and be like, it's the white man, man, it's the white man's world. You know, I mean, I don't do that.
you think that, like, your job should be separate from your beliefs. So you think that way and you think that the businesses should... agree with that way, right?
Well, this is basically. America. This is America. This was a place founded so that people that were fleeing persecution, as long as they weren't bothering anybody, could live their life out. As I said, I'm very libertarian. You know, I believe that as long as you're not harming somebody else, you have the right to believe or live as you want. And it's ridiculous. It's hypocritical for people that claim to be all white, or white, who claim to be, you know, like so proud to be an American or to believe in American nationalism or to be a constitutionalist or even to be a liberal or a libertarian, and then they fire me just because they don't like my belief.
Yeah, okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. You also were, in the emails you were talking about, political connections you have in Latin America, right?
Yes, yes.
Go ahead.
Some of these contacts I've had for 30 years now, 25, 30 years.
Yeah, so it, like, are you planning an expansion there for your church, or?
I did do a list of countries on the website that we do have members in. We do have members in South America. We have a lot of members and supporters in Brazil, Portugal, Spain, Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay. A lot. In fact, Brazil and Portugal, the amount of support we've gotten is rather, as actually, I'm a little dumbfounded at, actually. It's,
do you have like a count of how many, you know,
well,
like, do you have any number estimates?
I don't give numbers. I'm not Matt Hale. I'm not going to throw out a bunch of numbers. But on the website, it's a religion. It's very hard. I mean, nobody knows how many people actually believe in Islam or Buddhism. You know, it's a religion. You know, somebody might believe in it and just not be public about it. So it's hard to tell how many people follow a religion. I do know that people have contacted me in Eastern Europe and in South America, specifically converting to creativity because they've listened to my radio show, which is, you know, I upload it once a week. It's just I record an hour and a half long sermon. I upload it to the website. And I get people from many countries around the world that say, well, you know, I was listening to you. Somebody bitched about you on Gab or MeWe or whatever, VK, and I wanted to know what you were about, and I listened to your show, and I agree with it. And I decided to read, and I think that creativity is right for me. So I have gotten a lot of emails like that. And I've gotten those emails from places like Uruguay, Brazil, Portugal, Spain, Russia, Romania. But you want to know mostly about, like, non-white contacts that I got?
I'm interested in just, like, how expansive would you say your group is, you know? Like, I know you've got members in all these countries, but, like, is it, you know, a family, or is it, like, an actual community that's built up? You can identify, this is a creativity community that's connected to our church and not like the Creativity Alliance and stuff.
Wait, are you talking about, like, a whole town of members, or
not necessarily a town, but just like, you know, like one guy is, yeah, it's part of the movement, but it's not nearly as influential as, yeah, we have a church group here, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, you know, we focus mostly on family units and small primary groups.
Yeah.
I mean,
a primary group is what I'm really asking. How, like, do you have primary groups in all these countries?
Yeah,
or is
so,
it just,
so
you know that there are creators out there?
No, so the Church of Ben Clausen is set up, I set it up kind of similar to the way the Mormon Church is, the LDS Mormon Church,
yeah,
which is what I was...
I'm going to be honest, I don't know much about that church.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to elaborate on that,
yeah,
go
so,
ahead.
Okay, like, so I was raised Mormon. And I was actually, my father's a high priest in the church. I was being raised to be a high priest. But I just, you know, it didn't speak to me. I believed in, you know, nature's laws. And later on, I discovered, you know, esoteric philosophies, Nazi mysticism, the writings of Julius Evola, Rene Guenon, Giovanni Gentili, Miguel Serrano. I started reading these real like heavy type books, and I got into that. That's how I started getting most of my contacts in Latin America and Asia and the Middle East, because I also have contacts in the Middle East as well. And that was through all the esoteric kind of Nazi mysticism stuff. When I converted to creativity, I kept my, well, much to the chagrin of some members, I kept my contacts with non-whites. And I've never thrown away these contacts just because, obviously, I put the white race first, which is what my religion tells me to do. So, but I still have these contacts. And as far as the church goes, the Church of Ben Clausen, kind of got sidetracked a little bit there, but the Church of Ben Clausen is laid out a lot like the Mormon churches, where it's the focus is on the family unit, it's on the local congregation. So rather than having, you know, membership certificates and yearly dues payments like Matt Hale would do or the TCM or the CA do, I said, no, this is a religion. You either convert and you practice it or you don't. And so we have the basic structure is individuals and family units, and then they come together and they form primary groups. And a primary group, it could be anywhere from 1 to 25 people. And then primary groups come together, whether it's a large primary group or several small ones, they come together and they form a congregation. For instance, we have a congregation in the tri-state of Western Pennsylvania because we have so many members there. We also have a congregation in Central Texas because we have so many members in Austin and San Antonio. And we also have members in Houston and Dallas as well, but those are their own congregations. And so we do have congregations here and there. Usually, though, I like things to be kept family-oriented, individual-oriented. Live the 16 commandments, proselytize when you can, and basically just form your own primary group, grow that up to where it becomes a congregation, and eventually I will ordain one of the members, and then they run it as their own church. And my goal is to have 1,000 churches, just to have 1,000 individual Church of Ben Clausens around the world. And that's my goal. That's the goal of the Church of Ben Clausen, is to spread the religion and to have basically just have, you know, a church in every city, you know, where it's independent. It handles the needs of the congregants for that area, that region, that county, that state, that province, wherever it is. Because obviously what our members in Canada face is nothing like what, I mean, it is totally different than what our members in the United States face, because Canada doesn't have freedom of speech. Canada is a dictatorship. It might be a soft dictatorship, but it's still a dictatorship. So our members up there have to run their primary groups and their congregations different than our people in Utah and Pennsylvania, Ohio, Texas, the Northwest, the way they run theirs. And of course, you know, in Russia, it's a different scenario than if you're living in Germany, which is different than if you're living in Spain, which is different than, you know, Argentina and so on. So it's basically each primary group, you know, tries to grow to the point where it can become a full congregation and then, you know, sets itself up as an independent church within the Church of Ben Clausen. Does that answer that question?
That actually, you emailed me, you didn't like that I said that the creativity movement was dying, right?
Well, I mean, the creativity movement is a group.
The creativity religion, I said that it was like, it wasn't really practiced as much anymore.
Yeah, well, that's not true. Obviously, our church over the last 20 years has grown considerably, especially over the last few years.
Ben Clausen, sorry, I mix up the names. I think it was during his era, they had a 30,000 members, and that's like, that was considered the peak by FBI or some outside group. Would you say that you are close to that number? Great. Well, what, you know, what, you don't have to give me specifics.
No, what's the number?
30,000.
30,000 by 1993?
I don't know what year it was, but that's when that's what the FBI was like, this was the peak of it.
I can tell you right now that the number is probably between 100 to 300,000 actual adherents to the religion, people that actually practice the 16 commandments on a daily basis. Certainly there are millions of supporters of Ben Clausen's teachings that for one reason or another, they don't want to, you know, reject nationalism for their particular country. We have a lot of supporters in Eastern Europe that believe in most of what Clausen wrote. This is a good example maybe of what you're asking, but we have a lot of supporters, not full members, just supporters of the Church of Ben Clausen in Eastern Europe that see nationalism and the Eastern Orthodox Church as being racial. So they're integral to being a white racial loyalist. And so while they agree with most of what Ben Clausen wrote, they reject the anti-nationalism and the anti-Christian stuff. And so they're not members, but they do support the religion. I've even had non-whites. Some were contacts I had for 20, 30 years. Others were new contacts that said that, you know, obviously, you know, they don't see themselves as being, you know, that they recognize that the white race is superior in many respects, and they do admire the writings of Ben Clausen, but obviously they focus on their own race. I've had a lot of people in Japan tell me that. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. You know, you focus on your race, we'll focus on our race. But okay. There's no way. I have tried to calculate it by being conservative. I believe the number, as I said, is between 1 to 300,000 actual adherents. Supporters are in the millions. And that's both whites and political non-whites that also hate Jews, hate communism, don't believe in race mixing. There's a lot of people that have told me over the years, you know, as I said, they support the writings, they just can't give up nationalism, or they can't give up the Eastern Orthodox Church, or they're white power Mormon, they don't want to leave Mormonism. I've had these conversations with people over the years, and there's a lot more supporters than adherents just because of that. It's a very hard religion to follow because we do reject a lot of traditional concepts that are seen as being white pride, white power, pro-white. We're anti-nationalism. We're anti-capitalism as far as runaway capitalism goes. We believe in having a healthcare system. We believe in racial socialism. We reject Christianity completely. And these are things that are usually seen as, you know, we reject the right wing completely. These are things that are seen by people as being essential to being white power, white pride. And so the religion is very difficult for a lot of people to fully support, to convert to. But there are a lot of supporters, and way more supporters, like 20, 30 times as many supporters as actual adherents. Probably 50, 100 times as many. I will say that the ADL and the FBI did tell two or three media outlets in Austin, they gave them a figure that they believed that our church had in the United States. I've publicly stated that, but I can't.
So you said it was like a few hundred, right?
Depending on whether you cite the ADL or the FBI, it's between 600 to 700 members in the U.S. alone. That's what they say.
You're saying there's way more.
Yes, I'm going to say that there's more than that.
Okay. I got last question for you. This is your opinion. How did whites lose?
Lose what?
Compared to, like, America's not a, you know, it was, you say it's a white-founded country. Now it's not. Now we've essentially lost, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Jews, the Jews control the system. That's obvious. Even people that aren't racially conscious recognize that. I'm not one of these people that believes in saving the United States. Our religion is definitely not about trying to save the United
States. It's more... But, because whites are... You say that whites are superior, right? That's your belief.
The white race is the master race, yes.
How did we lose, then?
Oh, that's obvious. The unfortunately, white people are divided. That's the problem. I get asked this question a lot. You know, if you're so, you know, superior, why'd you lose? Well, you know, you can lose to somebody who's inferior if the numbers are so imbalanced. Plus, you know, white people are divided. What you have is a bunch of white people left the back door open. And so while everybody was watching the front door, everybody came in through the back door. You know, it's a standard divide and conquer tactic. Sun Tzu wrote about it in The Art of War. The Jews wrote about it in the Talmud. I think Nietzsche wrote about it as well. You know, it's a standard tactic. And unfortunately, white people are divided. I mean, look at us. You know, creativity is the ultimate white creed. You know, not Christian identity, you know, not white nationalism, not white Christian nationalism, whatever that is. You know, creativity is, but it's a hard sell. And I think the problem is white people have just gotten so used to all the Uber technology we have, the fact that they could just run to Walmart and get something whenever anything breaks in their house, that they don't really care. That's the problem. All they care about is money and materialism. And, you know, then there's the brainwashing element. You know, almost everything you see on TV and newspapers and from Hollywood, it's all from an anti-white slant. It's all propaganda. So it's kind of hard to compete against that when, you know, all you got to do is just sit in front of your television set or run to Walmart. It's kind of hard to compete against that. I can't offer money or television shows, you know, for white people. This is a hard life. Fighting back against the system is difficult, and most people just don't want to deal with that. They want everything to be easy. And with creativity, we don't believe in living easy. We believe in struggle, and that's what it's about.
Okay. I did enjoy chatting with you.
Do you want me to back Christian identity a little bit, or?
No, I do want to be clear. I still don't really believe. I don't agree with the tenets of your religion. But well, I do think it's interesting what you had to say. You know.
Yeah. No. That's fine. I mean, you know, people believe whatever they want. As I said, you know, I'm very libertarian. You know, believe whatever you want to believe. Whatever works for you, that's what works. Obviously, I want people to believe in creativity.
But thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, I'm an open book. Huh?
I guess I already pointed people to your website at the beginning, but
well, yeah. No,
are you running any congregations right now? Or
say that one more time.
You running any congregations right now? You want to promote?
Well, I mean, I want to reiterate that the Church of Ben Clausen is an actual church. We take creativity, the religion, very seriously. The Creativity Alliance, the Creativity Movement, these are membership organizations. These are clubs. If you're looking for something simple or easy to join, you know, some type of skinhead rally type thing, that's not us. We take the religion very seriously. And if anybody does want to know any more, they can go to the website creativityreligion.com, churchofbenclausen.org. You can send me an email. I'm very open. I answer all emails. I take my job as a reverend very seriously. I've lived on the street. I've lived in a shelter. I've done 12 years of incarceration in total. That's prison, halfway house, and jail. And, you know, I follow the 16 commandments, and I believe in it. So if anybody does want to email me, I will not lie to you. I will answer everything, even the anti-questions. Which are always fun. But anyway, give me a shout out at Reverend Lloyd at creativityreligion.com, and then I'll answer whatever anybody has. And thanks for inviting me on your, I don't know what to call this.
It's a YouTube channel.
YouTube channel.
This is different than what I usually do, but I was, after you reached out to me, I was interested in hearing from, like, I don't usually reach out to the people or groups that I'm observing, just because I don't want to get personal. You know, I want it to be kind of my own take on it.
Yeah, well,
but I thought that your group, yours is definitely a splinter. Like, it's different from what I already covered, so I thought it'd be interesting to talk to you about it.
Oh, we're definitely different. We see creativity as a spiritual, religious philosophy. We definitely follow it, and as somebody who would follow Mormonism follows Mormonism. You know, it really, for us, this is a spiritual, racial, religious path. It's definitely not about politics. It's not about, you know, seeing what organization has the most members, rallies. We take our oaths very, very seriously.
I think I'm going to end it here.
Oh, I did have one question for you, if you don't mind. Could I ask?
Go ahead.
I was looking at the handful of videos you have, and it was funny when you said you normally don't interview people for the videos. Does that include elves? You didn't.
Hey, you never know, man. Maybe I got a letter to Santa Claus.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. But thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. It's far too many people just read that I, you know, went to prison, or, you know, that I had a trial, or, you know, we're not like, you know, the American History X higher learning types, so nobody really wants to talk to us. But I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity.
It was certainly interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll be sure to send you the recording if you want. I don't know what you want it for, but
I'll probably just upload. I might actually use it maybe in one of my radio shows. You never know. I might just keep it.
My only real request, like, I don't know if you're the type of people, but you know, there's people online who they'll send their fans after them. I do request you don't do that. Like,
what do you mean?
If your guys send your fans to like downvote my, you know, creativity video.
Oh, here's the thing. I may be orthodox and a fundamentalist creator, meaning that if Ben Clausen says it's bad, it's bad. But I'm not one of these. I'm not like Matt Hale, where I try to be, you know, in control and micromanage everybody. I don't want somebody to do that to me, and I damn sure am not going to do that to my members. My members are pretty much free to do whatever they want. I mean, obviously within the scope of the creed and the program of creativity. But yeah, no, I don't do things like that. You know, listen, you post what you post, and you know that's on you. So.
Okay. Well, I will see you later. Probably not, honestly, but...
Well, no, thanks. I appreciate it. I had a good time.
I've never done this before, so it was kind of interesting, but...
Well, I'm surprised you didn't ask me about the trial or anything like that. That's usually the first thing everybody always asks me about.
But that's kind of... It's covered by everyone. I didn't think... If people look you up, that's the first thing they'll see. So I want to show something else, you know?
Well, no, I appreciate that. A lot of people don't realize just how different creativity is, and the Church of Ben Clausen is from the other organizations and ideologies out there. I mean, seriously, how many white power people today bash both right-wingers and left-wingers at the same time? You know, I mean, I'm going after communists and Christians. And, you know, I mean, how many people do you actually meet that are like that? So,
super centrist.
Hey, George Carlin had a big influence on me, so what can I say?
Okay, well, I'm going to be gone then. Bye.
All right, bye. And that is that, folks. Hopefully the recording, which I did two different types on, that was about an hour and 6 minutes, hour and 8 minutes. Anyway, folks, I will be uploading one or both of these. It depends on what it sounds like. But I will be uploading these. And I don't know what he's going to do as far as putting up this video that he's working on. All I know is he said it would probably be in a couple of weeks. He'd put a video, probably just going to be just going to be just the interview, maybe with a little brief intro from him and something at the end. But my understanding is he's going to just upload us talking. Anyway, I will upload this just to make sure that, you know, the truth is out there. Anyway, I guess I'll just say this one more time for anyone who bothered to download. It is creativityreligion.com, churchofbenclausen.org. Thank you for joining me, joining this conversation. And I will catch you all at a later date. Rahola.